All right, everybody, today we're going to be talking about the magazine landscape, where all of the assignments are hiding. So today what we're going to talk about is the literal magazine landscape. So where do you even buy magazines these days? Like I said, it's really changed. A lot of magazines are available online, and I'm going to share some interesting facts with you from the American Magazine Media Conference recently about that. And also how the magazine industry has changed around digital content and how that opens up more opportunities for you. And then we're going to look at five different types of magazines that you might not be considering that are looking for travel magazine, for travel article content. And often these can pay quite well and have less, I don't want to say editorial oversight, but less back and forth and sort of editorial indecision as the large magazines. If any of you have written for large magazines or heard me talk about it before, often when you're writing for these really large glossies, you get into this case where you're talking to one editor, you've written the article, you've worked on it with them, and then it'll go to another editor, and that editor will have a completely different idea for the article, and then you'll have to rewrite it. And then it'll go to the editor-in-chief, and they'll have a different idea for the shape of the article, and you'll have to rewrite it again. So in those cases, even though those clips are really great to have, they can be really bad for your hourly rate because the number of back and forths involved. So I'm going to talk about five different types of magazines where that's not going to be the case, and they often really have high hourly or how high pay rates in the first place. And then we're going to talk about three ways to find new magazines that are super simple, that you can do yourself to have new titles coming into every day. And when I say three magazines, I'm not saying, you know, two in the travel magazine database. I'm going to show you three different ways that you can have new magazines coming into your life. So before we start talking about the different magazines, I want to talk a little bit about magazine pay, because really, I mean, that's why we all want to get more articles assigned, right? I was thinking earlier about a conversation that I'd had with a gentleman in London last year that I know I brought up during the break your trips into different article ideas webinar last year. And he had said to me, and I went and looked up the quote because I wanted to make sure I had it right. He said if on a 1 to 3 day trip, he can break that up into 10 article ideas, or rather 10 sold article assignments. And I think for a lot of us who are, you know, perhaps either struggling to get our first clip or to break out of the $25 to $50 online market, or just feeling like we're sending a lot of pitches and not getting responses, that sounds like a really impressive number. But the thing is that when you really break down the types and the quantity of articles you need to be selling to really be making a living as a travel writer, that's kind of what you need to do. And I remember when I first was starting to work as a freelance travel writer, I was on, I guess it was a webinar in the Freelance Writer's Den, which is a more general website for freelance writing, and there was a guy in there that did a webinar on travel writing. And even to this day, I feel like a lot of people don't know him. His name was Bob Howells. And the interesting and sort of sad takeaway that I got from that webinar, which was really meant to be kind of an intro to travel writing, was that if you want to make money as a travel writer, you can't travel. Because when you're traveling, that's time that you're not spending at your desk and you're not spending writing. And so in his kind of setup of how travel writing works, you want to spend the least time possible traveling and the most time possible writing. And I personally prefer the opposite. I prefer to be traveling all the time and, you know, working essentially part-time writing and also traveling. But what I really took away from that is that you can't be going on a trip and selling one article, one big article, even if it's a big feature, alone from that trip, because the pure time that you're spending away from your desk just doesn't add up. Say, for instance, you want to earn, let's say, be very conservative, say you want to earn $40,000 a year as a travel writer. That breaks down to about $800 a week or $160 a day. And so what that means is that if you are on a three-day trip, including or not including travel, then that's going to be $480 that you couldn't have earned because you didn't have time to write. So that if you look right off the bat, if you're just selling one feature or a few blog posts, you're barely even covering the time, the sort of comp time or whatever you'd like to call it, of not doing other writing work. And so to go back to this gentleman that I was talking about that says he can do 10 article assignments from a 1 to 3 day trip, you know, if you look at it that way, even if they're $300 feature assignments or $300 shorts or something like that, now we're in the range of you're getting $3,000 of content out of a 3 day trip. And that's really the type of numbers we want to be aiming for. So when this whole time that we're talking about pitching different types of magazines and what is the real breadth of the magazine landscape, I really want to talk about this in the vein of getting you more work for the trips that you're already going on. Okay, so how does that translate into pay? So just in the chat box over here, as I'm talking about the different types of magazines, just chime in as I'm going through what travel trade and consumer and custom means. Which of these different types of magazines you think pay is best? So again, to go over these three different types of magazines. So consumer magazines are probably the best ones, best known ones. These are the ones that you're going to see when you go to the bookstore or, you know, even like in your doctor's office. These are the typical magazines that you are able to buy, you know, the Condé Nast Travelers, Travel and Leisure, Midwest Living, you know, Denver's 5280, LA Magazine, all these kind of things. So that's a plain old consumer magazine. But there's also niche consumer magazines, right? You know, there's Porthole Cruise, which is for cruising or, you know, going on cruises. There's Cruising World, which is actually for sailing, conversely. There's food and travel and all sorts of food travel related ones. There's even specific ones for types of food. There's Taste of Italia, which is an Italian food and travel magazine. And so that's on the consumer side, right? But then you can also get the same general and niche side for trade magazines. And what trade magazines are is these are ones that you couldn't buy even if you tried. They go on a very specific circulation to people who work in a particular industry. So general travel trade magazines, there's a group called Questex that produces a lot of these that you might have heard of. There's Travel Age West, and they have several online ones as well, but they've got about 20 different magazines that are sort of general travel trades, just Travel Weekly, things like that. Also Skift, if you're familiar with Skift these days, is a bit of a travel trade publication. But then there's also niche travel trades. So there's one that are specifically for meeting planners or hotel owners or people who do IT in hotels. So that's a very specific area of travel trade as well. And as I said, because travel trade magazines are going out specifically to people who work in certain industries, the reason that you can't get them is that the way travel trade magazines make their money is that they promise advertisers a certain number of eyeballs, which often isn't large. It can be in the four digits or just five digits, like 15,000 readers, but they're all people who are spending a lot of money. So the niche travel trade magazines, like I said, might not have as big of a reach, but for advertisers, they pack a bigger punch. And then the last one I've got on here is custom magazines. So custom magazines, the ones that we're most familiar with are the in-flight magazines, right? You know, Hemispheres from United, American Way from American, Sky from Delta. And there's a whole world of custom magazines. We're going to talk about that a little bit more later. But just over here on the side, before I go to the next slide, chime in. Which do you think pays best? Niche travel trade, niche consumer, general travel trade, general consumer, or the custom magazines? Okay, I've got some very diverse answers. So the first one we got was a niche trade for sure, and we've also got one for a vote for consumer and for custom magazines, niche magazines. Great. So I'm going to go to the next slide. So this is a slide that I've used before, so some of you may have seen it. And this, of course, is a selection. So I'm not showing, you know, every magazine that exists or even necessarily a specific slice of the world. I've got a bit of American magazines in here. I've got a couple other ones, but largely American. And this, the scale here is the number, the amount of money you'll get per 1,000 words of text. So of course, not every article is paid in 1,000 words. You know, you might be doing a 100-word article, 300-word article, 2,000-word article. But this, to average it out, is the amount of money you would get per 1,000 words, and this is sort of the base rate that the magazine will pay on the bottom to the top that they'll pay on the top. So you'll see on the far right here, we've got some newsstand magazines, so consumer magazines, but again, they're a bit niche. So Savannah and Portland Monthly are both niche in terms of geography, but they're newsstand magazines. So these would be considered major consumer magazines. But then on the far right, we've got Backpacker and Afar, which are also newsstand magazines and also niche. So Afar is experiential travel, and Backpacker is sort of very outdoors, off-the-beaten-path travel. And so it's interesting to look at this, because on both sides of the spectrum, we've got niche consumer magazines. And so it seems like pay doesn't necessarily correlate to those five types of magazines that I showed you if you just look at that graph. And I would say that's definitely something that's true, that it's hard to know just by the type of magazine how much they pay. And this is important to remember, because you might get into this trap where you think, oh, well, I don't want to pitch the niche magazines or the regional magazines because they're not going to pay as much as the major magazines like Afar or Condé Nast Traveler. The thing is, that's not always the case. So if we look at the ones that come, oops, sorry about that. If we look at the ones that come before Backpacker, we've got VIA. And if you're not familiar with VIA, that is from AAA, so the Car Insurance Association. And we're going to talk more about association magazines later, but that's not only an association magazine, but it's also geographically specific. But they've got a pay rate that's up there with these newsstand magazines. And then before that, we have two other hyper-niche magazines, Cruising World, which, as I mentioned, is about sailing, and Modern Farmer, which is about sort of small family farms. And then going down from there, we have some other magazines that are Large Garden and Gun and American Way. But again, we've got Garden and Gun as a regional magazine. This is more about the South, and American Way is a custom airline magazine. So it's really tempting to sort of cut yourself out from a whole sector of the magazine landscape because it seems like the pay isn't so high, but it really varies from magazine to magazine. And so we recently had somebody who signed up for the Travel Magazine database, and he was telling me, oh, well, this magazine doesn't use freelancers, so or something like that. I only get paid for freelance contributions. And maybe it's because it's a Middle Eastern magazine. It's based in the Middle East. There's not a lot of these English language magazines based in the Middle East. And my first thought was, you know, it's a really beautiful, glossy, luxury publication. So if you were to just look at that publication, would you think that it doesn't pay writers? No, probably not. And so what that means is that if you are a freelancer who's really looking at, you know, boosting your income by having more magazine articles accepted each trip, then that might not be a good fit for you. But conversely, if you're just looking to get more assignments from each trip so that you have a guaranteed spot on a press trip, then a magazine like that might work well for you. So while we certainly are looking at broadening our magazine landscape in terms of what we personally have in our portfolio to have more income, it can also be useful in a pinch if you really need to get on a trip to know about these magazines that perhaps don't pay or don't pay so much, because they can help you make sure that you have enough assignments. All right, so super interesting fact from the recent American Magazine Media Conference that right now we're in this era of fake news, right? I'm not going to dive off into politics for a second, but consumers are increasingly becoming aware of the type of news they're consuming and the validity of its source, more so than ever before. Not just in the U.S., but around the world, in the last year or so. And what that means is that a lot of the major magazine companies, which, you know, perhaps 5 years ago or even 7 years ago, were really worried about losing ground online to new upstarts, have stopped worrying about that so much because their brands carry a lot of weight. And so on the one hand, this means that, you know, you could say, oh, well, they're investing more in digital content, but that's not always the case because often they're taking their content that's been in their print magazine and repackaging it. And while it's certainly true that a lot of the large magazines do have digital-only content, I often mention Men's Journal runs 8 to 12 travel pieces every day on their website. Condé Nast has a lot of pieces that go up in their very extensive newsletter and online. Travel and Leisure's got these great slideshows that pay $1,000 a pop. Savoir's got a bunch of stuff. Afar has started really working on its Wayfair blog. So a lot of the larger magazines do commission content specifically for their website, but a lot of magazines are reusing things that they're assigning in the print magazine in different ways online as well. And so in this era of fake news that we're in, the really great thing for us writers is that the places that are more likely to pay us a good wage are starting to get more of those ad dollars back. They're starting to become more attractive for advertisers. And in fact, something else that they said at the conference was that, and I'm not sure if this is true, so this is why I'm attributing it, but that National Geographic is the biggest brand in terms of views or followers on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Not just brand in terms of type of brand or magazine, but just the biggest name out there. And so I think that's really a great boon for us in terms of finding these different places to write, because I think that a lot of folks have gravitated towards online in terms of not just the big magazines' websites, but online in terms of new sort of startup online magazines or blogs and things like that to get the bulk of our writing work. But these magazines are really starting to invest a lot in their online content and in their print content as well, and so that's going to trickle down to us. So another factor of the current magazine landscape is that magazines not just have changed how they reach people in terms of using more online, but the new magazines that are starting have really changed. So somebody earlier mentioned that they thought that niche trade magazines were the biggest game in town in terms of pay. And niche magazines are for sure the biggest growth market. So in terms of new magazines that are opening up every day, I can't even tell you how many new, whether it's regional bridal magazines or regional plus some other niche magazines, I see there's whole magazine companies that have sprouted up essentially out of nowhere that offer 12 or more different titles all around the country. And what this means is that the advertisers that pay print, who, you know, that money is what trickles down to us writers, are still very interested in paying for ads and these things. And so magazines, like I was talking about in the niche trade area, are very interested in serving those small markets. And so these hyper niche markets, like I said, might mean luxury weddings in different parts of the country, but they might also mean esoteric things. Like I was mentioning Cruising World, which is a newsstand sailing magazine, but there are a lot of different water sports magazines. I think there's like 12 to 14. So everything that you can think of as a topic has a great number of magazines, print magazines, just in the U.S. and even more around the world that serve it. So if you're thinking, oh, I have an article about tea, I have an article about water skiing, I have an article about kayaking, there's probably not just one magazine that focuses on that thing. You have a lot of opportunities to place that article just in magazines that serve that niche. Now, the other thing that I sort of alluded to earlier is that companies are producing multiple magazines in diverse markets. And so this works both ways. Companies are producing more magazines of the same topic in different geographic areas, and companies are also producing magazines that might be trade or they might be, custom or something like that for a lot of different markets. So Inc., for instance, which is the company that produces a lot of the airline magazines, they have maybe 4 new titles that have come on just this year alone. And Amtrak's magazine Arrive has been redone and is now called The National, and that's being done by Inc. as well. And so a lot of companies on the hospitality side, whether they're airlines or hotels or things like that, are turning to these content companies that produce magazines to produce magazines for them as well. So for instance, Inc. now has airline magazines not just for the hemisphere of United and the American way of American of the world, but they also do really beautiful and very long magazines for low-cost carriers all over Europe, the type that you'd be surprised they even have a magazine, but it's really meaty and quite long. And the other thing that's changing a lot is that magazines that have a focus on storytelling are really getting away from online content. And this is an interesting change because there was a whole slew about 5 years ago. There's like Overnight Bus, I want to say it's called, and there's Wild Junket, which is by my friend Nelly. There's some different online travel magazines that all sprouted up right around the same time. And it's a tough business model to have a digital-only magazine that functions like a normal magazine. And so what happened is that then there was this whole new wave of indie or independently published magazines that make beautiful, stunning print versions that are really almost like books or collectibles that you can't read the stories online at all. And we've got a bunch of those in the travel magazine database, but some off the top of my head, there's Frankie is not so much an independent, that's sort of an Australian magazine around travel, but there's Avant, there's Gourmet Traveler, there's Fine Drinking, which is out of Greece, there's Alpine Modern, there's just so many of these very, very beautifully done ones, even around very niche market. There's two around cycling. There's one called Bunyan Velo and one that's called Ride Journal that are, I think both of them are annual, but they're just beautifully, beautifully laid out. And so the one caveat of those is that, well, they might not have the best budget for writers. In some cases they do, the more established ones that come out monthly, or ones that are very posh, such as there's this one called Ernest with a lowercase e, which comes out of the UK. And it's got a very hilarious description. It says it's for discerning people who might like to whittle. That one is the type of magazine which has a budget because it's been backed by somebody. So sometimes they don't have a budget, but they're always going to be beautiful, beautiful clips. And so particularly if you have gone on a trip and you have a story that you just love, it's really great from the angle of the story itself and the people and the characters, and perhaps it's long and you're having trouble finding a home for it. These indie magazines can be the great, I don't want to say final resting place in a negative way, but a great place to finally get the right fit for those sort of things. So I just have one more question over here before the next slide. So Nathalie has asked, how do you push these magazines with an LOI or with a normal pitch? So all of the magazines that I've mentioned just now, you're going to approach all of those with a normal pitch. Letters of introduction or LOI, if you're not familiar, are essentially the same type of thing you would use if you were applying to a job online. You're saying, here's who I am, here's what my experience is, like, would you like to work with me? And so letters of introduction are primarily used for trade magazines, and in fact, not all trade magazines use them. I was just reviewing with somebody at IdeaFest over the weekend a magazine called Plate, P-L-A-T-E, which is a trade magazine for chefs, and it's got a lot of really sort of, I don't mean basic in terms of content, but in layout, really basic sort of features that are around 1,500 words, and they're composed of 3 to 5 interviews, and they're very formulaic and easy to write around trending topics in the restaurant world. And so we were looking up how do you get into that magazine, and that one you actually reach with a pitch. So with some trade magazines, it's going to be letter of introduction, and those are the ones that cue very, very closely to their editorial calendar. So if you look at a trade magazine and its editorial calendar has mapped out the idea for every single article and every single issue, that means that you need to approach it with a letter of introduction. But if you see a trade magazine that has more of a loose sort of editorial calendar where they might say the theme of each issue and maybe the topics of a couple features or some recurring columns, those are the type of ones that are going to be open to pitches. All right, let's go ahead. So I want to talk about 5 types of magazines that you're not pitching, but you should. And again, if at any point I mention something and you're like, oh, what was that magazine that you mentioned? Or can you talk about that more? Just throw it over here in the chat box. So I sort of alluded to these earlier when I was talking about modern luxury, but one of the magazine areas that I think is really most useful for travel writers that a lot of people neglect are these luxury titles that you just can't find. So these are the type of magazines that are found for free for people who are in airline lounges or the small private airport lounges or that just arrive at their homes. And these are very, very luxury oriented, naturally, but they also are primarily, if not 100%, straight travel content. So there's very little business. It's really aspirational because these magazines are being sent to these people or left in the airline magazines for free because these people are big spenders. So the point of these magazines in terms of the content is really to inspire people to travel, inspire people to spend more, and obviously to get them to look at the advertisers. And the thing about these magazines, like I said, is that unless you're a very, very high net worth individual, which I don't think any of us are, they're hard to get your hands on. So obviously we've got a lot of these in the travel magazine database. It was one of the things that I really focused on collecting early on because they tend to have great rates and, like I said, be hard to find. But you can also find them yourself. So often these are things like private airline magazines, and we're going to talk about, again, like I said later in the call, some different techniques to find magazines. But just sort of in short, like if you find one company that makes one luxury custom magazine, they probably make more. And so for instance, Privat Air actually comes from the Inc. magazine group that I was talking about earlier that makes a lot of the airline magazines. Modern Luxury, which I mentioned before, you know, I know the one here, Modern Luxury Manhattan, but they also have titles all around the country. There's also, like I was saying, these Luxury Bride magazines that are very geographically dispersed and things like that. And for the airline lounge magazines, these are the type of things that are often what I like to call travel adjacent titles. So there's one that's called International Property, and this is going to be profiling, you know, destinations as well as properties that are for sale or that are very attractive around the country. And what I really like about including these type of magazines in your consciousness is that when you travel, you see ideas that you wouldn't have even thought to sell before. So for instance, even outside of this International House and Property one that I was mentioning, the International, I guess it's not the International Herald Tribune, the International New York Times, as it's now called, they have a section on property that is open to freelancers and pays quite well. And that's the kind of thing where as you're traveling around, say you're on a road trip through Ireland or something, and you see a castle with a for sale sign, you get something to show you around the house, and you pitch that. And that's not the kind of thing that you would necessarily just do automatically. But now that you know there's a home for that story, that's a stop that you can include in your trip. Likewise, I was saying there's a lot of these luxury wedding magazines. And during Idea Fest over the weekend, somebody was talking about how they went to this inn. I believe it was in North Carolina. And it was just this beautiful sort of woodland setting. And the owner said that they're completely booked April through October every weekend with weddings. And I turned around and I said, well, did you pitch that to a wedding magazine? And she said, no, I hadn't thought of that. So anytime that you're staying in a hotel that also has event space, that's something that you can be taking to these high-end wedding magazines or even just the normal wedding magazines. And likewise, you can also take that to a meeting planning magazine. And we're going to talk more about those in a minute. So how many of you know about association magazines? Just say yes or no over here in the chat box if you do. So there's a lot of different types of associations out there. Like I mentioned AAA, which is the American Automobile Association. There's also CAA, which is the Canadian Automobile Association. But I'm sure if any of you have ever worked in different industries, or you might even know from travel writing, there's a lot of different professional associations. So these are things like in travel writing, we have the Society of American Travel Writers, we have ASJA, which I always get wrong, but I believe it's the American Society of Journalists and Authors. There's NATJA, which is the North American Travel Journalists Association. There's another one I always get wrong, which is the International Food, Wine, and Travel Writers Association. All these professional associations exist in other areas, and they all have magazines. And there can also be associations, like we talked about AAA, which is something you paid for, but there's also ones that are sort of affiliate groups. So there's Italian-American magazines, there's Greek-American magazines, there's Irish-American magazines. There's ones for people who, you know, are in the NRA. There's all sorts of affiliate groups, and I'm not saying necessarily all of them go with travel, but there's all sorts of affiliate groups out there that as part of the membership in the association, they also put out a publication, and that's one of the automatic perks of membership. And so you're going to get that without necessarily subscribing automatically, the same way that if you're a high net worth individual, you're going to get these magazines automatically coming to your home. So in this case, there's a lot of these that are really useful for travel writers. As I mentioned, there's some affiliate groups like the ones I've listed here for Italian Americans. So you might think of something and think, oh, you know, how many magazines are there for German Americans or Italian Americans or, you know, people who knit? You'd be surprised. So I've just mentioned here two that are for Italian Americans, but there's actually several others. And these magazines, the ones for people who have a certain type of heritage, are often really great from a travel perspective because they really like to include those angles either of, you know, a story of someone who has come here from that country or a story of someone who's a descendant who's gone back, or just a straight travel story, or sort of a profile on something that's of what's going on in that country. So for instance, I did one for Ambassador that was a year after the big earthquakes a few years back in Emilia, which is the region that produces Parmesan and prosciutto and balsamic vinegar, on sort of checking back in with the region a year after, and as a traveler what you need to know, and how you can patronize these businesses and help them recover. I did another one for them on Pompeii, which was having some trouble getting funding for its restoration. So they don't have to be straight travel. And these can be some great things for, I've talked in the past about research interests. If you have something that you're just really intrigued about, so for instance, we've got Tanya on the call and she lives in Japan. And when I was in Japan before, I had gone to this festival that only happens once every 7 years. And I was talking to somebody who had previously lived, they taught, I think they were a Peace Corps or something like that, but they taught in Japan when they were much younger, and they had come back every 7 years with their friends that they had taught with to go to this festival. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, but there's another one in the town next door that happens every 4 years, and this one over here that happens every 3 years. And I never knew that there was this thing of Japanese towns having these religious festivals at these very odd intervals. So, for instance, Tanya could decide this is something that she's interested in, and in order to find out more about it, be pitching article ideas to these types of magazines to essentially, you know, fund, give her an excuse to learn more about these things. So these affiliate-oriented association magazines can be really great for things like that. Now, the paid associations, and here I've listed AAA, but there's, you know, a lot of other ones around this. And in fact, I think people often forget there's this website, World Nomads, which takes a lot of travel blogs. And they even are an insurance company like AAA. Geico also has a magazine. There's some very odd and interesting association, paid association-oriented magazines that you will start noticing now that I've mentioned it to you, either that you get or perhaps that your parents or your friends get. You'll just kind of see them lying around. And so AAA, for instance, I believe has 23 different magazines, and they're all very geographically focused. And just as a warning, if you go try to look them up, you need to have the right zip code. So before you go try to look up a AAA magazine in a specific area, look up a zip code for the geographic area that it serves so that you have that ready to pop in. Because otherwise, if you put your own zip code, it's going to pop you back to the AAA magazine that's specific for your area. And then if you want to see a different one, you need to clear your cookies. So I mentioned earlier VIA, which is a very highly paying AAA magazine, and they're all produced out of different editorial offices, which can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing, because it doesn't necessarily mean that if you have an in with one editor, you're automatically going to get more assignments, but it does help. But what that also means is that you can pitch similar magazines to different AAA titles. And so VIA, for instance, is a very well-known literary travel style title, and that's part of why they pay well, but it's also a really great clip to get. And it's interesting among AAA magazines because it serves a very large geographic area. And often they're serving a very small slice, not exactly half of Delaware, but something almost as small as that. And then another thing that I just wanted to touch on is the magazines that come from professional associations. So I mentioned a couple of the travel associations that are professional associations that you might know about, but there are literally professional associations for everything. And there's pretty much always two minimum for every type of profession because, you know, you have to have competition. And so I just put a couple of random ones in here, American Architects Association and Pizza Today, because I want you guys to remember that as you travel and you find businesses that really strike you as having a cool backstory, or maybe they're doing some really interesting marketing, or they're a restaurant that's doing something very different with their menu or style of service, I hear a lot of people come to me with pitch ideas around those things. They're just hard to sell as a straight front of book, like short news piece to a travel magazine because they aren't new. They've been around for 3 years or 7 years or something like that. So if you have something like that that you find on the road that isn't new, it's not news, a really good place to profile that business is going to be in one of the professional association magazines of the industry that that business is in. And we're going to get to some more travel-specific ones later, but I just wanted to point these out, the Architects one and also Pizza Today, because there's businesses that you come across all the time. You know, there's several trade magazines for hairstylists. There's just trade magazines for everything. And so anytime that you are finding a business that you think just really has a great story or a great technique or something, you should be taking the profile of that business, not just trying to place that in an airline magazine that does a lot of business profiles or as a roundup of different businesses that do the same thing in a mainstream magazine, but also as a profile or a service how-to-oriented piece in the professional trade magazine associated with the industry that that business is in. So I just mentioned travel trade magazines of different types. And as I said earlier, there's lots of sort of classic ones like Travel Weekly and Travel Age West, which are sort of about the industry as a whole. Also, Skift has kind of been there these days. But then there's a lot of ones that are more niche travel trade. And then there's ones that are super niche travel trade. So I've pulled together a couple on this list that really caught my eye. And you'll notice that in the first section of niche travel trades, they're quite tour-oriented. And that's because there's a very large market for these. People who do tours of different types are always scanning these magazines to figure out what's new, what they might include that they didn't know about previously, destinations that they'd never thought of that might be worth a stop. There's a lot of growth of regional tourism throughout the U.S. and also in other countries, but especially the U.S., that really benefits these people who do the sort of bus tours. And so anytime you are on a road trip of your own and you're finding these like little tiny stops between point A and point B, those are great things to take to tour magazines who have bus tours, who are doing a similar thing to your road trip, but with a large group. I was in the Cava region of Spain, so like outside of Barcelona, with another travel writer doing a visit, and it turned out that the day that we were there doing our visit, there was a little bus tour, and I want to say that the women were from Dallas. So it was about 8 to 12 well-heeled ladies from Dallas who liked to shop and were very interesting. Many of them, you know, worked in PR or had businesses of their own that they ran back home. And here they were kind of on this girls' trip. Some of them knew each other before, some of them didn't. And so we did this Cava tasting with them, and we had lunch, and we were chatting with them about the type of tour they were on. And the thing is that there are so many of these little tiny tours around, like I was talking about the affiliate associations. There's so many tours around little different types of affiliations all over the place, and the place where people are getting the idea of where to bring either their little or their 55-person bus groups is from these magazines. So these are trade magazines, and as I was saying in response to Natalie's question earlier, some of them you do pitch by letters of introduction. But if you found something great like this on one of your trips, it certainly doesn't hurt to write them and say, I found this thing that I would be a good fit for your audience, and then say who you are and ask them if you could write them a full-fledged pitch. So another thing that I had mentioned was the travel adjacent or very, very niche publications. And there are a lot for hotel owners, and there's really a lot for meeting planners, which I had mentioned earlier. And so anytime you are in a place which is a venue, so either it's a hotel or museums are very, very common venues for all sorts of events. A hotel, a museum, obviously a convention center, but there's a lot of other great things that are venues. For instance, in San Francisco, they have the Masonic Center, which is historic but also a venue. There's lots of historic homes that also host events. So I had someone at the Idea Fest event over the weekend talking about how when you go on press trips, you're in this tour for like an hour and a half with this museum and someone's telling you everything, or you have to go walk around the hotel and see every single room and they're telling you the square footage, and what a waste of time. But the thing is that those things you can pitch to these types of magazines, whether the ones for meeting planners or in the hotel industry, without it having to be super, super new. Because this is similar to how I was talking about pitching a trade magazine for people who work in different sorts of niche industries around a business profile or an interesting marketing technique that someone is doing or something like that. So for instance, if you're walking around a hotel, doing a hotel tour or a site visit, as they often call it, and they mention to you that they've got this neat in-room, I'm using an actual example here from Miami, I think it's called the One Hotel, but they've got this in-room thing in the shower, which is sort of a heads-up display board which shows people their water usage in real time. How cool is that for the Hospitality Technology magazine? And so these are the types of little kernels of ideas that often get sprinkled on you when you're walking around doing a tour or when you're just doing research for a trip that you would never necessarily think of pitching if you didn't know about all of these little tiny magazines. And I personally haven't spent a ton of time with the hotel business ones, like Hotel Business Review and Hospitality Technology and Hotel Owner. But even now that I'm talking to you, I'm like, oh my God, I should go back through my notes and pull out all the little things like this. Okay, so another one that I mentioned quite briefly earlier is English language magazines and non-native English speaking markets. And I know we've got a couple people on the call here who do live in other places, or non-English speaking places natively, or who have in the past. So if let me know in the chat box here some in your own market that you know so that I can share those with other folks on the call. So I was recently in Asia and Japan last year, but I also spent a lot of time in Asia because my husband's from India. And so India, of course, is, you know, not necessarily native English speaking, but it's a largely English speaking country. And so there are a lot of publications in English in India, but you often also find them in other markets where English is not one of the main languages of the country. And so I remember I was in Singapore, also an English language market, but I went to the store and I was just shocked at the number
of Asian magazines from different Asian countries that are English language, that are beautiful, glossy magazines that pay quite well. And I've listed a couple here, but it isn't limited just to Asia, where you do have some countries where English is one of the primary languages. I see a lot of these in Europe, and in particular, I often see, this is another type of custom magazine, but I often see these days that airports have their own magazines, and they might just come out once a year, but sometimes they come out once a month. And so there are these little airport magazines, and they focus quite a bit on shopping, but they also have a lot of destination content for the types of places that people frequently fly from that magazine, or from that airport, rather. And so that's one example of types of English language magazines that you can find in different markets. And there's almost always an expat magazine in any given major city. You know, I know in Florence we have one, which is not even a huge city in Italy, but it does have a lot of expats. They have them in Prague. They have them in a lot of different places. But what you want to look for is not necessarily just the expat magazines, which are going to have a little bit of travel content, but particularly for the types of magazines that are serving, let's call it, the well-heeled locals who also speak English, because these are going to be the types of magazines that are probably going to be paying better and also have editors that work more on a level of editorial process that you're going to be familiar with. And another one that I think a lot of people forget is the equivalents in other primary native English-speaking markets of major magazines. So I've mentioned, for instance, Condé Nast Traveler India up here. There are a lot of Condé Nast Travelers. I mean, they also have them in other languages. There's Condé Nast Traveler Italia, but there's one in the UK that we also have in the database. I didn't even realize until we were working out for the database that there's a completely different National Geographic Traveler in the UK as well. And so it often pays when you are on the road just to stop into the airport newsstand and check and see which versions of magazines that you have at home have a completely different version abroad. Lonely Planet, for instance, which is currently, even though the publishing company is based out of Australia, the magazine is primarily based out of London. They have, I think, 12 different versions now all around the world. They have a US one that's quarterly, they have an Indian one, they have one in Australia, one in the UK, and then several other markets. I believe they have a Middle Eastern one as well. Now, something also that I've mentioned earlier is the specialty custom magazines. So again, the custom magazines that most of us are familiar with are going to be like the airline magazines. So just, I've mentioned a couple here, but drop over here in the chat box some other custom magazines that you might know about. And I think that a lot of times, with the custom magazines, we automatically think of the businesses we know. Stacy Brooks dropped in a great one here, grocery store magazines. I didn't even mention this on here, but there's so many great grocery store magazines these days. In fact, even Walmart toyed with a magazine for a little while. I'm not sure if they're still doing it. But in the UK, there's some really, really nice grocery store magazines. And I sort of first became turned on to these, not through airline magazines, even though I was definitely keeping an eye on those, but through car magazines. My husband had an Acura when we were dating, and we were getting this Acura magazine, and I was like, my God, they have some really great road trips in here. And since then, I've sort of poked around, and a lot of the car companies, I haven't even mentioned them all in here, also Rolls-Royce has one, but a lot of car companies not only have magazines for their car owners, but they have different editions in different markets. So for instance, we went to put Mercedes-Benz in the travel magazine database the other day, and realized that the copy that we had was the Canadian Mercedes-Benz, which, very interestingly, it's a great magazine with lots of opportunities for freelancers, but is completely different from the US one in terms of it has a section on Canadians abroad. So if you're traveling and you find a Canadian who is doing something interesting, who lives outside of Canada, and you know, if you live in the US, that's obviously a pretty easy one, but it's also easy in a lot of other markets, they want a profile. And there's also, in the topic of custom magazines, the Philippine Airlines magazine, which is Mabuhay. They're also always looking for profiles of Filipinos who live abroad and do something interesting. So the car magazines aren't necessarily just for road trips or car-oriented content. You can find a lot of other interesting profiles in there, whether of people or businesses. Now, another one that I think people don't often think about is cruise company magazines. you know, they use these similarly to in-flights to have information at the back of the magazine about the routes and about the company and about the amenities and different things like that. But they have a lot of travel content. And these come primarily through a company called the PPI Group, which also produces the Porthole Cruise magazine, which is a newsstand magazine, which is a consumer magazine. But then they make all these custom magazines for pretty much every different cruise company. They've got Costa Concordian, which is an Italian company, as well as MSC Cruises, which is another Italian company. And they've got Cunard, Norwegian. They've got all the big hitters. And some of these magazines only come out annually. Some are more common. But the interesting thing about this, because they all go through the same group, is that if you get an article in one of them, they might just automatically use it in another one and just pay you a reprint fee. So that's one of the really nice things about working with magazines in the same group. And then another one, you know, related to the whole airline, cruise company, the next obvious one is hotels. And not every hotel has its own magazine. I see a lot of hotels that I go to will use the local Dining Out magazine or the local Time Out magazine. Or, for instance, I was in Colorado recently, and there's a lot of really beautiful glossy magazines in Aspen and different parts of Colorado that they'll use instead in the room. But whenever you stay in a hotel, you should always check and see if there is a hotel magazine there, because some of the magazines these days are doing some very interesting stuff. So Auberge Hotel, which is a luxury hotel chain, and obviously luxury hotel chains tend to have these more frequently than other hotels, but Auberge not only has its own sort of branded magazine, but they also have a separate one specifically about food that you also find. So this one chain has two different magazines. And Marriott, which currently has a whole big content operation that they work, I believe, through Contently, but they've started their own content studio and they're producing films and all sorts of stuff. Marriott also has some geographic-specific ones. So Marriott Destino is its publication in South Florida, and it's published both in Spanish and in English. Okay, so that was five different types of magazines that you might not be considering that you should start to factor into your thought process as you go on trips and plan your pitches. But here's three more places that you can just pop on if you have 5 minutes a day to find more magazines all the time. So one of my favorites that I've mentioned a couple times earlier is to play follow the leader with the company. So I talked about Inc. Global and how they do American Way and Hemispheres, but they also do a lot of airline magazines for smaller airlines that you wouldn't even realize had a magazine. And then they have new ones coming out. So they're now doing, I want to say it's Singapore, but they have a new magazine called Silk Air. No, I guess it's not Singapore. I can't remember which airline that is. But, you know, they have a new magazine called Silk Air coming out, which I wouldn't have realized if I wasn't just hanging out on their company's website. But then they also do ones for other things. So like I was saying, they do that private airline, the Privat Air, one that shows up in the lounges for private pilot airports. And they have ones also for hotel chains as well. And so this doesn't only work for custom magazines. This also works for consumer. I mentioned a couple of times the modern luxury titles. And you'll see this with affiliated titles, but you also see it for non-affiliated titles. So there's the Hoffman Group, which is unusual in that it's a major magazine company like Meredith and Hearst, but it's based in Birmingham, Alabama. And they make a lot of very lovely and well-paying glossy magazines, specifically about food and about the southern U.S. So they have Tea Time and Taste of Home and Paula Deen and all these other things. So whenever you find a magazine that looks legit and it looks cool, check the masthead, see what publishing company makes it, and then go look at that publishing company and see what other magazines they have. I remember we found, I can't remember which one was first, but Five Star Kids, which is an Australian magazine for super, super wealthy families that's focused on family travel. And then I looked, and they also had four other magazines that are also these sort of high net worth travel magazines that have a lot of content in a niche market that you wouldn't know about otherwise. Now, a similar tactic is that once you've found a magazine, leaf through it, check the bylines, and start looking up the writers, because once you get on the writer website, you'll see where else they've been published. And, you know, depending on how up-to-date their website is or how many places they've been published, you can find anywhere from 10 to 50 good markets just on the portfolio websites of other writers. And so, like I said, you can piggyback this with the first one. So when you find a new magazine, go check out the publishing company, find some other magazines that way. But also, flip through the magazine, find a feature you like or check the front of book pieces, and then just go Google those writers and get on their websites and see where else they've been published. Now, the last one isn't necessarily something that you can do in 5 minutes a day here and there, but this is something I really recommend. So even before I quit my job to be a freelance travel writer, I still can't even remember how I convinced my friends to do this, but I had all these friends that did different types of business consulting and things, and so they were just on airplanes all the time. And I was like, ooh, can you get me the business class magazines? Because I had already been collecting the economy magazines for a while from all the different airlines that I took on disparate trips, like to Bali or wherever, every time I was on a different airline. But then I was like, can you give me the business class ones? And I still have friends. I had a friend ship me from Israel the other day the magazine Ling, which is from Welling. And this is a really great way not only to get airline magazines, but specifically to get those ones that I mentioned that you need to be on the list to get. So these can be the car magazines that only go to people that have already purchased a particular car, or the ones that are for associations. I have my best friend's an architect, and she gives me her architecture association magazines when she's done with them. Or, you know, even this came up the other day, another association that has a really, really great and well-paying magazine is AARP. And it was funny because at the Idea Fest this weekend, you know, we had very disparate ages. We had somebody who's still in college and is looking to get herself set up as a travel writer as soon as she graduates. And we had some people who are now on like their third careers. And I mentioned AARP magazine, and you could see sort of the collective, I don't want to say disgust, but like, oh, that's not a fit for me. And then I mentioned that it pays $2 a word, and then everybody wanted to know all about it. And so AARP, which is the American Association of Retired Persons, I believe, not only do they pay $2 a word, but interestingly, they have three completely different versions of the magazine that goes out every month, and they call them the A book, the B book, and the C book, which I think is very horrible designations, and I'll tell you why. So the A book is for 50 to 59-year-olds, the B book is for 60 to 69-year-olds, and the C book is for 70-plus. And so they put different content in each of these magazines every month. So what that means is that even if you get your hands from somebody in your network or relative or something like that on one AAA magazine, there's another, and you don't know what it looks like. And so, like I was mentioning about AAA, these will come to you automatically if you live in a certain geographic area, but otherwise it can be difficult to see the ones in other geographic areas. These are great things to have your relatives or your friends collect for you. And obviously, you know, if they're going to ship them to you, make sure you send them back the shipping money. But I highly recommend letting people know to be on the lookout for you, because like this one I mentioned, the Geico magazine earlier, I never would have even thought that Geico had a magazine that had travel content, even though it's very similar to AAA in that they're selling insurance, until we got it at our house one day. So I'm sure now that I've mentioned this, you're going to start thinking of ones that you have, but let your parents know, let your friends know, and also just don't paw through their mail. But when you're at their house, sort of, you know, ask, hey, are you using that magazine? Can I steal it? So those are three ways that I really like to have a constant fresh source of magazines coming to you. Every time you see one that's new to you, check on the masthead, the name of the company that publishes it, then check out the writers and see where else they've written, and then also let your network do some scouting for you. So that's our call today. If you have any questions, let me know over here on the side. And as always, it was a pleasure chatting travel writing with you. Have a great week, everybody.